everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Hey, what do you do during the day? You know, this is the kind of season where people get a little lazy, you know, and they feel like laying around and just thinking, and you let your brain float. There's something about the summer that makes your mind a little freer to take, well, to vacate. You know, the word vacation comes from the word to vacate. It just basically means you're leaving your mind for a little bit. Leaving your mind is a very pleasurable thing to do because sometimes our minds are so active that they make you crazy. You know, I mean, sometimes your mind just won't start doing two things, you know. There are two ways of making yourself crazy. One is called the future and the other is called the past. One is called regrets and the other is called fear. The fear is always about the future. You see? And, I mean, it's sometimes imminent. You know, fear is imminent. Like if somebody's coming at you and they're threatening to hit you, you could be afraid. But it's still the future because you're afraid they're going to hit you. So fear is something in the future usually, and regret is something of the past. So if you live in fear and regret, you're living in fantasy. You're living in some time and place other than now. Reality is here. It doesn't mean you shouldn't consider the future. Like wondering where you're going to make your, how you're going to make your food, how you're going to make your money, how you're going to make your rent. That means you can't consider, it doesn't mean you shouldn't consider the fact that maybe you should have treated your kids a little better when they were growing up, or maybe you should have taken that job that was offered to you, or maybe you should have bought that house, or maybe you should have bought Apple stock when it was at a dollar. Whatever it is that you have as regrets, those are regrets. But if you obsess about them, if you think about them all the time, if you're always thinking about regrets, or you're always thinking about your fears, then, my friends, you're in trouble. Because then the mind is using these two things, the future and the past, as a way of keeping you from settling down here. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, WBAI. I want to talk about the power of the human mind and why the mind does what it does. And I'd like you to understand why the mind does what it does. Let's talk about imagination. Let's talk about the fact that you have the ability to imagine things. Wonderful things about humans. They imagine. Imagination is such a fantastic tool. Fantastic. Because if it weren't for imagination, humans would never have survived. You had to be able to create new ways of getting by. And in order to create them, you had to think about them. You had to imagine them. We're far, far ahead of most animals in the animal kingdom. They didn't have as much imagination. If you ever look at an anthill, you see a lot of imagination, a lot of creativity, but it's kind of redundancy. It's kind of repeated patterns over and over again. And they're considered very intelligent beings. But humans, whoa, spectacular minds. Spectacular. The human mind is like something, it's a phenom, you know? You watch it work. But then, of course, the human mind works and then it overworks. And what does it do for you, you know? After a while, it just makes you crazy. So imagination is a wonderful thing. To have imagination means that you could, in your mind, be able to think of alternatives to what is immediately in front of you. That's a good thing. Some people have no imagination. Now, that's a good thing also, because if you're going to have somebody who is going to build the dam, like a beaver, you know what I mean? And they're just going to keep adding, and they're building the dam and building the dam, and there are these people who do one thing, and they do it by rote, and they do it over and over and over again. These are the solid forces. These are the builders. These are the people who don't need to be creative. All they need to do is do what they do best. So if you're going to be somebody who is building something, that's great. You know, if you don't have any imagination, we don't want imagination. Sometimes you hire somebody, and let's say you hire somebody to, you hire somebody to take your kids to school. You don't want any imagination in there. You just want them to take your child to school. I want you to do this thing. Let's say you hire an office manager. Yeah, you have a manager who comes to work for you. You don't want them to have imagination about what different ways they're going to do things. You want them to do what you've set out for, what you've spent 20 years organizing. You want them to do the same kind of thing, maybe create something a little later. But you don't want too much imagination. There are people who are imaginative, and they're so imaginative that they can't stand still. They can't repeat anything. Do you ever meet people like that? Their brains can't follow a thought, you know, a thought going from point A to point B without them creating some alternative. So that's one kind of person. Those are very creative people. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, talking about the power of the human mind and why the mind does what it does. And I promise you, by the end of today, you're going to understand sexual fantasy. You're going to understand hallucinations, delusions, and all the other great things that our minds are capable of. A fantasy. A fantasy is a set of mental images that generally do not have a solid basis in reality. They might have a reference to reality, but not a solid basis in reality. If you picture yourself flying, it's a fantasy. Okay? A fantasy is inspired by imagination, characterized by mental images that do not necessarily have a relationship to reality. In psychiatry, fantasy is considered a defense mechanism. Now, why a defense mechanism? Because, in effect, we learn to fantasize to escape the present, to get out of where we are. And when things are not so nice where you are, you learn to imagine yourself outside of where you are. For example, after being reprimanded by a supervisor, a worker may fantasize about taking over the company and firing the supervisor, right? Nice fantasy. But your mind does it to help you with the powerlessness that you felt when you were reprimanded by the supervisor. Similarly, a child may fantasize about running away from home in retaliation for the parents punishing her. See, fantasy, I'm going to run away from home. Do you ever feel that way when you're a kid? How many of you planned to run away? I planned. I remember really young planning to run away from home. And I remember, I mean, this is embarrassing. It may be a true memory. I'm not sure. It may be a story I told myself. But I remember I did run away from home somewhere very early, like 5 or 6 years old. And they found me right outside. And I knew because I couldn't cross the street. I was not allowed to cross the street. I was too young to cross the street, so I wouldn't cross the street. So I ran away, but I wouldn't cross the street. Now, that may be a story they told me about me, but I think it might be true. I remember something about being stuck on that street corner and saying, what do I do now? Vivid fantasies are often a part of childhood, you know, diminishing as a child grows older. So for many people, they maintain their childhoodness, childlikeness, by keeping the fantasies going. If you just think about all the fantasy movies that are out there, all the movies that bring you into fantasy and how people are find it so attractive, you know, to go into things where they could see people flying and people conquering. And, you know, movies are about maintaining your fantasy. Movies are fantasies in themselves. I mean, how much of it is based on reality? There are reality shows, which was this radical thing, but they're not really reality shows because they're not really reality because there's somebody with a camera. And in real reality, there's nobody with a camera. Vivid fantasies are often a part of childhood. In the majority of individuals, fantasy is not the fantasy, is not a cause for concern. And most people, don't worry about it. You have fantasies, don't worry about it. We'll even talk about sexual fantasies not to worry about. We'll talk about fantasies to worry about, too. Sometimes your fantasies serve you. A man who came into my office many years ago, his family brought him in. He was about 80 years old. He was in bad shape. He believed he was Napoleon. He sat at my desk and he said, I am Napoleon. And I said, what are you doing here? He says, I don't know. These people wanted to bring me here. And they literally faced me. And I looked at him and I said, so you're really Napoleon? He said, yes, my horse is downstairs and Josephine is waiting for me. And his daughter and son who brought him to me said, look what's happened to him. He's completely in this fantasy. And I looked at the man, and the man was a sickly type, and I had this image to myself. I said, well, okay, here's what happens now. He feels that as a response to the powerlessness of his getting older and sicker, which he was pretty fragile, I said, what's happened is this fantasy has grown to protect him so that he still feels strong. Now, here's our choice. We could take away the fantasy, and we could bring him into reality, and he's going to have to face the harsh reality of being at his age but being very fragile, and he's going to have to deal with that, or we could leave him alone. And I said, this is a very important choice. And his children said, well, if we get him to face the other thing, if we take away his fantasy, their real involvement was they wanted to have their daddy love them. They wanted to have their daddy present because daddy was now Napoleon, you know what I mean? But when they thought about it and they thought about the pain that he would have to go through, they opted to leave him as Napoleon. He lived about 4 more years, I heard. You know, and he died as Napoleon. Fantasy is not much of a cause of concern for many people. As long as the fantasizer is aware that the fantasy is real, well, in his case, he wasn't aware of it. But there was a consideration. When the line between fantasy and reality becomes blurred, however, it's possible that some form of mental disturbance, pardon the word, is present. It means your mind may be a little out of whack. It happens. It happens. I mean, just think about being punchy. You know, if you're in a place where there are a lightning storm, you know, and lightning strikes and it strikes 4 places around you, the next time you hear thunder, you're going to cringe. You know, look at so getting punchy, in effect, is having a fantasy that something is going to happen. It's imagining something is going to happen. And many people live their lives as if they're in a lightning storm, as if any minute now something is going to strike them. This is called paranoia. I have a cat. My cat hears something fall. It believes it's going to fall on him, even if it's on the other side of the room. So what he does is he jumps and runs under something. Now, what's going on? Is cat wacky? There's nothing to worry about, cat. It was just on the other side of the room. It hears thunder. It hears noise. It just runs automatically, right? Now, I'm sure it's not fantasizing. It's just automatically reacting. But let's think about the ability of humans to have imagination and fantasy. Look at how we humans can sort out what is real and what is not real. How we can hear an explosion and say, all right, it's not going to hurt us. It's fireworks. You know, oh, look in the sky, it's fireworks. How we could do this, and I mean, this is an amazing capacity. We don't have to just run away. You know, we don't have to just duck and hide. Fantasy works for us. Imagination works for us. Creativity works for us in many ways. But when the individual regards his fantasy as reality, it has no longer become a fantasy. So the man who came to see me as Napoleon was not in fantasy. He was delusional. The word is delusional. Because it's like he has a deluge of fantasies, you know, a deluge. It's like he's deluded. He's like this is it. He's completely in it. Or it's called a hallucination. If you actually imagine, there are auditory hallucinations, there are visual hallucinations. Auditory hallucinations, you hear things that aren't there. Or you see things that aren't there. So if you think that there's somebody who is talking about you and you turn around suddenly and say, who was that? And you see nobody there, you're probably hallucinating. Now, hallucinations are a sign that something's happening inside your mind, and they usually need attention. They are one of the symptoms, one of the many symptoms of schizophrenia, you know, and psychosis. And that means, that doesn't mean you are schizophrenic when you hear, have hallucinations. But your mind is beginning to stretch a little bit, and it's good to pay attention to it. Professional evaluation by a shrink at that point probably would help you, because there are ways out of it. Sometimes people have these things crawl up in their brains without even having a reason why. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So what about your fantasies? What are your fantasies? What would you like them to be? What would you dream of? Remember, a fantasy is a situation imagined by an individual or a group. Now, there could be group fantasies. You know, I mean, I'm not saying it's necessarily true, but when suddenly 24 people say they saw the Virgin Mary descending, you know, and they saw her coming down to Lourdes and, you know, I mean, that sounds like a group fantasy, right? Or aliens are traveling down, you know. Which, it doesn't correspond with the reality that most other people see. Fantasies typically involve situations which are impossible, such as the existence of magical powers, or highly unlikely. Fantasies can also be, of course, sexual in nature, which we'll go into. So, this is Armand DeMille with you, with The Positive Mind. You're interested about what people do with sexual fantasies. There's a thing called fixed fantasy. You should know about fixed fantasy. A fixed fantasy, also known as a dysfunctional schema, right, is a belief or system of beliefs held by a single individual to be genuine, but that cannot be verified by reality. The term is typically applied to individuals suffering some kind of dysregulation of the mind, you know. Sometimes it's in a personality disorder. A person just has it's a dysfunctional schema. It's a belief or system of beliefs held by a single individual to be genuine, but can't be verified in reality. They were looking at me. They're all looking at me. Everybody looks at me. And you try to verify it in reality, and of course people are looking all over the place. You can't really verify it. It's called a fixed fantasy. Fixed fantasy differs from a delusion in that it's a fixed fantasy tends to appear plausible, and the person expressing the fantasy is not suffering a break from reality. So they sound kind of like they make sense. A fixed fantasy also differs from a religion or superstition in that these are culturally bound, whereas a fixed fantasy is specific to the individual. There are people you know who have fixed fantasies, and they tell you, "I know he loves me." But it's not, you know, there's no reality to it. In and of themselves, fixed fantasies are typically not harmful, but they can interfere with an individual's ability to develop a really coherent and integrated life experience. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about fantasy. You know, there is a fantasy spelt with P-H, just in case you didn't know. You may see it occasionally. There's P-H-A-N-T-A-S-Y. Fantasy with a P-H, or should we say pantasy? Like they say psychiatrist in Germany, psychiatrist. And they say psychologist, they say psychologist. You see, they pronounce the P. It's like the silent P in swim. Fantasy, spelt with a P. You didn't get that, did you? You didn't get that? You're still looking for it, the silent P in swim? Fantasy is when you're swimming. Fantasy is a state of mind of an infant child during the early stages of development. They're largely unconscious in that they're not differentiated from conscious reality. In the early prelinguistic existence, fantasies differentiate very little, if at all, between reality and imagination, so kids can't tell what's real and what's not real. They really can't tell. They don't know the difference. You know, your dog looks at a TV. He knows what's real and what's not real. He knows that the cat on the TV is not a cat. He knows that the bird is not a bird. Your cat looks at the TV. It's okay, they have fish swimming, a little bit of interest in the color passing by. They know the difference. But babies, they don't. Fantasies stem from genetic needs, drives, and instincts. And they appear in a child as kind of dreams and play. Because that's what's going on in that kid's brain before it becomes able to talk linguistically, before it could communicate. The babies having all kinds of things going on, trying to distinguish what's real and what's not. Fantasies with a P are the means by which infants make sense of the external world and hence relate to it through both projection and introjection, which means they're either going to let it be real, they're going to take it in, or they're going to push it on the outside. So it's a different way of looking at it. It's not the regular way. Infantile feelings and fantasies, spelt with a P, leave as they were their imprints on the mind. Imprints that do not get fed away, but they get kind of stored up. They don't get thrown away. So all of you have in your mind some infant fantasies, some connections, some things that happen that you can't tell reality from non-reality. Are there places that you get confused between what's reality and non-reality? Are there places where you get stuck in fantasy? You know, we'll take your calls a little later, and we're going to be asking you about this. Now, of course, one of the greatest forms of fantasy, and here's a definition, you know, fantasy is a situation imagined by an individual or a group which does not correspond to reality, I said that before, but expresses certain desires or aims of its creators. Now, here's what, I was looking at this with Stephanie Dombra, and we always ask the, what's the hormonal connection question? And here's a question I had about fantasies. What do they do for you in your adult life? Even sexual fantasies, what did they do for you? Now, we were researching and we found that men who have the most sexual fantasies have higher levels of testosterone and, get the other one, dopamine. Dopamine is the one that's associated with aggression. You know, dopamine is kind of one of those nice juices that we get. We like dopamine because it kind of feels it stirs you up. And testosterone certainly stirs you up. So with men, it seems to be that, but with women, it seems to be different. With women, it's mainly something around the estrogens that get secreted. Now, why do men and women have different fantasies? What are the different kind of fantasies they have? You know, a male fantasy usually has an image. Where is that thing? Here it is. Here it is. Listen to this. The reason may be about evolution. Okay. Found that males have sex fantasies that are 50% more frequent than females, much more graphic, involved twice as many imagined partners, and showed less concern for emotional bonding. Okay. I have asked many a young man who comes to see me when, you know, almost all men have sexual fantasies, and they have sexual fantasies in private, and they don't like to talk about it. They don't like to talk about when they masturbate. They don't like to talk about what they look at. They don't like to talk about their imagination, but all men kind of go through this. 95% of the men go through it. But when a man goes through it, I ask him very specific questions about it because I'm curious. What kind of imagination does he have? See, there's a real difference here between a kind of a male approach, what they call a male approach, and the female approach. Is there bonding? Some men imagine sexual things happening with women, but they cannot picture genitals. Now, that's very common with women. With women, they will picture something romantic, especially something from the past. Closeness and romance. And from a past sexual experience is what they will imagine. Closeness, romance, his hands, you know, something wonderful. Raises the serotonin level, makes you feel more alive and more connected, and makes you feel sexual. For men, their fantasies usually are much more vivid images, graphic things, and they're not so concerned with the ambience. Where does it take place? They don't care about the mood. They don't care so much about the non-sexual caressing. You know, there's not very much of that. It's not a part of it. Another interesting thing about women's sexual fantasies is that the majority of women's sexual fantasies involve dominance over a man. Dominance, some control over the man, in some way. And it may be controlling his sexual impulses. It may be controlling his desire. It may be just in some way controlling him. For that, that engenders certain reactions in women that they seem to like. And men's fantasies are usually over some kind of control over women, right? And so most sexual fantasies of men are where they're doing something to a woman. So now, wait a minute. This is kind of interesting. If the women have sexual fantasies where they're doing something to a man, and the men have sexual fantasies where they're doing something to a woman, what's this suggesting that we're looking for? Are we just desperate for power? Well, I don't think so. I think what it's looking for is, I think it's looking to charge your system. When you're in a dominant position, when you're in a controlling position, it really ups the juices in your body. It makes you stronger. And I think people like to feel strong. I think people like to feel powerful. And I think people use their fantasies, whether it's a sexual fantasy or a fantasy of power, to just feel stronger than they do in life. They just want to feel a little better, you know? And I'm willing to say that the people who feel the most powerless have the most fantasies. And the people who have the least amount of power, the people who feel the most weight, the people who feel the most powerful, have fewer fantasies. And they live out their fantasies because if they're powerful, they can arrange it. And people who feel the least powerful have active fantasies of power. And power may not be hurting somebody or killing somebody or something like that. You just got to figure some way to keep yourself going. And if you feel like a dish rag or a rug that's being stepped on all the time, of course you're going to have fantasies of power. There's a common fantasy out there, by the way, about alien abductions. Do you know about that? This is a real common fantasy. It's like a big percentage of people believe that there are aliens who are abducting people and taking them away. In fact, there's a wonderful website about cows that get abducted. Remember that thing about cows? About cows who are getting abducted over and over again. It's like this belief that somebody's going to come along and take you off the planet and take you away. And so people really believe it. But keep in mind, the idea of most fantasies is to get you some sense of power, unless the fantasy is attached to fear. If the fantasy is attached to fear, then you say, well, what does that do for anybody? Well, fear is an interesting thing. Fear gets your juices going. You know, if you're tired and you're sleepy and you're dreamy and you can't get yourself up in life, a fear fantasy actually motivates you to stay awake. So if you're somebody who might slip into a prolonged slumber, you know, like sleep to death or something, and you have this, what's going to happen is your mind, your amygdala is going to say, get up, because if you keep laying there, you're just going to expire. So it goes into your brain and it activates, the amygdala activates, and it sends you images of things to be afraid of. Fear is one way that people keep themselves awake, you know, and so you're scared. You're scared and you go around and you're scared of this and you're scared of that and you're scared and you see you're always tense and you're releasing and you feel, you know, but this way at least you're alive. So now get this, my friends, phobia. People who have phobias, and we may get into a lot of the phobias when we get back from our break, phobias are a constructed way of maintaining a sense of alertness. Humans are not that stupid. So you pick a particular phobia, like you have a fear of black cats, right? And you have a great fear of it. It'll always keep you alert because you never know where a black cat's going to come from. Right? Phobias, things that people are afraid of, and we're going to talk more about the fear of heights, always keeps you alert, always keeps you going, it invades your dreams. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to continue with more discussion about this, and we will be taking your calls. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind on WBAI 99.5 FM. We'll be right back. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind, back with you. Where was my music? I was going to play for you today. She had such a beautiful thing set. Here it is. Here she is. Here it is. Fantasy, Mariah Carey. Sweet fantasies, huh? Sweet, there are sweet fantasies. There are wonderfully sweet fantasies. It's really remarkable having the ability to imagine as we do. You know, we just want to be able to have this imagination. There are daydreams, you know. A daydream is a fantasy that you have while you're awake, especially happy, pleasant thoughts, hopes, ambitions. They are not necessarily fantasies because there's a reality built into most daydreams. Most daydreams take the form of a train of thought, leading the daydreamer away from being aware of his or her immediate surroundings. Any of you ever daydream, you know, what do you daydream? You daydream what it's like to be sitting in my office. You daydream what it's like to be at the beach. Daydream what it's like to, you know, daydream something that you've done, you know, something that you've had. Now, people have seen daydreaming as lazy, non-productive pastimes, but it could be a constructive in many ways. There are many people who have artistic careers, composers, novelists, filmmakers developing new ideas through daydreaming. Daydreaming becomes one of the ways of keeping your brain active and flexible. And flexible is very important for the human brain. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Talking more about fantasy and delusions. Now, let's talk about delusions. Delusions are those things you imagine that are not true that feel bad. You know, you have a delusion. It doesn't feel good. A delusion is an unshakable belief in something that's untrue. It's not true. Now, these irrational beliefs, they defy normal reasoning. They remain firm even when there's overwhelming proof is presented to dispute them. There's a wonderful book I remember called The Three Christs of Ypsilanti. Ypsilanti was a state prison, Y-P-S-I-L-I-N-T-I, or something like that. Ypsilanti. Anyway, The Three Christs of Ypsilanti was about a psychiatrist who worked in the prison, and he had three people who all thought they were Jesus Christ. So he took them and he put them in a group together. Now, he had three delusional people, right? I mean, maybe one of them really was. I don't know. What do I know? But they were three guys claiming they were. And he put them in a prison in a group where they met with each other every week and they would talk to each other. Do you know, it's an amazing thing how they negotiated it. Because at first, for like months on end, they would not shake their system. Now, here they are. If one of them would believe, hey, really, I'm not Jesus Christ, look at how it would shake his system. Look what it would do to him. Instead, what happened was they somehow negotiated. One became Mary Magdalene. Another one became the father of Jesus. You know, they switched into three different roles. You know, Joseph, not the father, you know, the other Mary's husband. Delusions. Delusions are often accompanied by hallucinations, and that's the things you see and the things you hear, and that are not there, you know, and feelings of paranoia, which act to strengthen confidence in the delusion. So now, again, back to the chemistry of it. If you have a delusion that someone is trying to hurt you, then you have this paranoia, which is you feel this impending doom. Now your muscles tighten. Now you start pumping up juices that are now ready for the fight. And all of this reinforces the delusion. Fear reinforces delusion. Fear must go along with delusions. Delusions are a common symptom of several mood and personality-related mental illnesses. Schizophrenia, you know, schizoaffective disorder, bipolar disorder. Sometimes you see it there. There's also a major feature of a thing called the delusional disorder, which is individuals with delusional disorder suffer from long-term complex delusions that fall into one of six categories. You ready for them? What do you think are the six most common delusions that people who are wacky, when I say wacky, meaning their head went off askew, have? Now, one more thing I'll explain to you. I'm going to go to the six different things. We all emotionally live on a continuum. Sometimes if you're calm and you're okay, you could be like a normal guy or gal. And then under pressure, you could get nervous. And then under more pressure, you could get tense. And then under even more pressure than that, you might become worried. And now increase the worry, and you could become so worried that you're fearful. And then increase the fearfulness, and you could become, I don't care. Now watch this sequence. You go from, at first, being a normal guy, then you get a little nervous, then you get a little stressful, then you get, after stressful, you know, you start worrying, and now after you're worrying, you worry so much that you become really frightened, and after frightened, you become non-caring. You cut off. The fear gets so much that you just, boom, you cut off. I don't care, and you go blank. Now, these stages also go along with sometimes you're a normal person and you could become histrionic, or they call it histrionic, you know, just nervous, agitated, neurotic. It means that you're not neurotic all the time. It's just under pressure you become neurotic. And then under more pressure, right, you become paranoid. You start getting worried. You get fearful, and then under even more pressure, you become psychopathic, which means that you no longer care about anybody. So this continuum, we all seem to have a continuum of our emotional states. So we usually don't have a fixed emotional state. That's why when a person goes to a shrink and they see a shrink, sometimes the shrink says, oh, you got bipolar disorder. And then the next day you go to another shrink and the shrink says, no, you've got depressive disorder. You go to another shrink and they say, no, I think you're schizophrenic. the reason they can have that is because you could be at any point anywhere along the continuum, and that's what you have to understand. So it's not the shrink is seeing wrong, it's that you can be at any time different. So we're going back to the six categories of complex delusions that people have. The six. Now, it means that you may have these sometimes and not have them other times. But here are the six. Persecutory is the most common delusion. And I'm going to describe each one. Grandiose is the second one. Jealousy is the third. Erotomania, somatic, or mixed. Let's start with these. Persecutory delusions. Here they are. Individuals with persecutory delusions are plagued by feelings of paranoia and an irrational yet unshakable belief that someone is plotting against them or out to harm them. I saw a young man who I really love yesterday. I haven't seen him for a long while. And he came back to me and he was robbed twice. And he's a very honest guy and a very sweet man. And he's a lovely guy, but he was robbed twice. They invaded his home. They took a lot of stuff. You know, they took everything. Not only once, but a second time they came back. Man came and he sat in the chair opposite me. And I suddenly saw for the first time he was paranoid. He went from being one of the most trusting people to a paranoid person. He got punchy. He was on the continuum, you see. But as he was talking, he was saying, I know they're watching me. I know that they're watching me so they could find out when they could rob me again. Now, he did not have such a fragile mind when I knew him 5 years ago. But the robbery obviously triggered off some feelings in him. Persecutory feelings. Grandiose delusions. Now, by the way, if you just tuned in, we're talking about different ways that people have fantasies, you know, and we have sexual fantasies, we have different fantasies, fantasies of power. Grandiose delusions. Individuals with grandiose delusions have an overinflated sense of self-worth. Their delusions center on their own importance, such as believing that they've done or created something of extreme value, or that they have a special mission. Now, when somebody comes to you talking about the fact that they have a special mission, you know, watch it. That usually fits into what we call paranoid, delusional, grandiose. Also grandiose would be people who have, well, you know, on American Idol, you see the initial, you know, when they do the initial interviews of people and they have these kids come up and they sing and these young people sing and they have terrible voices. They have terrible voices. So there now the judges say, hey, what are you doing here? You shouldn't even be here. You have such a terrible voice. Of course, they know it. They know that in advance. That's why they put them on the show. But they put them on the show and they show that they have a terrible voice. But the people who are singing believe they have a great voice. They have a delusion. Usually these are people who practiced on their own in their cellars, in their basements, who sing and they have a mother who's telling them everything you do is golden, you know. So they develop a delusional disorder and they are shocked. When you have a grandiose delusion, it is usually attached to an artificial image of yourself. Does that make sense? You think you're a star and you just haven't had your break yet. Now, you go somewhere like American Idol, and if they're rough on you, they tell you, you're absolutely wrong. You got zero talent whatsoever. Don't even come back here. This is zero. Go wash dishes or something. If they're rough on you, you could crack the entire structure of a person's being. And a person who shows pathological grandiosity, meaning that they show that they can't really, that they have an illusion, a delusion, about how good they are or how great they are, you got to be careful. Got to let them down gently, you know. And if you don't let them down gently, if you crack them, and some of you have seen it who've watched American Idol, you've seen people fall down and break up, you know, and they kind of collapse. And you see them crying, and then they get angry. So one of the steps that happen to people who have grandiose delusions when the delusion in some way gets cracked, and this will happen on jobs. Let's say you have a job and you're both applying for a position. You want to get a managerial position and you're somebody who's waiting for the managerial position, but you get passed over. You get passed over and you believe that you were the right person for the job. You believe you should have gotten this job. Well, for some people, that's just part of the breaks. That's the way life is. Maybe it's politics. For other people, they completely fall apart. The people who completely fall apart are usually people who were grandiose, who had an imaginary idea of how valuable and strong they were, and they probably got passed over because their boss perceived that their mind was not so strong. But when people have a reaction, if you have a reaction, it's based on your delusion. Delusion is you're great. And then somebody cracks that. You know what the first response is? Wrath, anger. It's almost like there's a gatekeeper inside the shell of your imaginary self. And this gatekeeper is like a lion. And when somebody cracks the shell, the lion comes out and attacks you. What do you mean? I'm no good. What do you mean? Screw you. You're wrong. And they get angry and angry and angry. And the strength of the anger shows you the vulnerability of the person. So, you know, if you see somebody who's having a big reaction, back off. Back off. You don't need to go after them. You don't need to challenge them any further. They're having a big reaction because they're about to collapse. You know, this is not a person who is really strong, even though they're acting like a tiger. They're really very weak, and they're falling apart. Armand DeMille, we're talking about people with delusions. Jealousy. Nah, there's a good one for you. Jealous delusions are unjustified and irrational beliefs that an individual's spouse or significant other has been or might be unfaithful. And people who have the jealous delusion, and I've seen many of them, they are always trying to figure out who is, you know, how is he cheating on me? How is she cheating on me? They check your email, they check your phone bills, they check everything. Now, it's an interesting thing about this. Because when you have a jealousy delusion about somebody you care about, that person begins to feel persecuted because you're penning them in, you see? And what you do out of your jealousy is you start to restrict them. I want you to carry a beeper. I want you to carry a cell phone. Always answer your cell phone no matter where you are. Why didn't you answer your cell phone? You know, things like that. And little by little, you constrict the person. Now, by doing this, and what happens when you have a jealousy delusion, you constrict the person so much that they become like a lion who gets caged in. And the cage starts closing. You start checking their telephone bill, and you start asking them, what was in this bill? Why did you call this place? And more you start closing in on them and closing in on them. And you know what happens? They get so fed up with it that when somebody comes along who is a possible affair they have, they jump into it just for the relief. Now, this is a horrible thing because what's happened now is your delusion of your jealousy became validated. And now you say, I was right all along. So sometimes jealousy creates the very thing that you're afraid of. Armand DeMille here with you. We got a few more minutes. Let's talk about erotomania. Erotomania, this is such a common thing. Individuals with erotomaniac delusional disorder believe that another person, often a stranger, is in love with them. The object of their affection is typically of a higher social status, sometimes a celebrity. This type of delusional disorder may lead to stalking or other potentially dangerous behaviors, and we heard a lot about it. So, you know, the person who is an erotomaniac, and I don't like the word maniac, but it's called erotomania. And mania means I'm just lost in an active world, because it's a very active state of existence. Your brain is buzzing a mile a minute. You're feeling very, very excited, and I got to call him up. I saw the way he looked at me today when he passed by. You know, and it was, I saw that glance. I know that he wrote that. I saw him writing with his pen, and I'll bet he was writing me a note that he's afraid to send me. And that's what they make up. That's erotomania, and that's sad. It's sad. Usually it's a person who has a really significant missing parent that they're looking to connect with. Finally, there are somatic delusions. And somatic delusions involve the belief that something is physically wrong with you. The delusion may involve a medical condition or an illness or a perceived deformity, you know, like people look at themselves and they think of themselves as ugly, or they, oh, I'm too fat, or my nose is too big, or, you know, something like that. This condition differs from hypochondriasis, is that it's the deformity is perceived as a fixed condition, not a temporary illness. In hypochondriasis, people think hypochondriacs. They think I've got an illness and I've got to take care of it. But with somatic delusions, you believe you are disfigured and that there's something desperately wrong with you. Now, there are other delusions that people go through. And in these other delusions, it could be a mixture of all of the ones that we've talked about so far. It's kind of amazing, don't you think, what the imagination will do? So what do you do when you live with somebody who refuses to get help when they're delusional? How do you get it? How do you get them to someone else? Here's what the experience I've had is, since the person is guaranteed, especially if they're paranoid, to think that anything you do is questionable, the best rule is for you to get into therapy yourself. You have to be able to separate your reactions so that you know you're not reacting from some unmet need of yours. Now, once you get into therapy and you go into therapy and you talk to a counselor, it doesn't have to be therapy. It could be a group. It could be a church. It could be whatever you like to go to. But you go somewhere where you feel supported and you feel in your belief. What you do is you invite your mate to join you. Even though your mate may be paranoid, if they have a skilled therapist, and if you can't, they will eventually see that there is somebody there who's willing to help them. It's a funny thing when I meet people who are paranoid. I meet them and I look at them and I can see, you know, I see their fear. But they know me. They know that I'm a good guy. They know that I'm not going to hurt them. They know that I'm going to say, oh, I see you get all these worries all the time. I see you have all of these fears. Let me see what I could do. Now, if you perceive that somebody who has a delusional disorder is a danger to themselves or to other people, I'm sorry, you know, it's, don't hesitate to call someone, call the police, call an ambulance, call 911. Because there's a time at which there's a limit. And when somebody says to you, you know, I'm afraid you're going to call the police on me, it usually means it needs you to call the police on you. You know, they're looking for some kind of help. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. There are things that we've been looking at today, and we were looking at fantasy and reality. And, you know, because everybody knows about sexual fantasy, and everybody thinks that sexual fantasy is a terrible thing. You know, they think, oh, sexual fantasy shouldn't be had. Really, sexual fantasy is just beautiful. If you bring a sexual fantasy into your relationship with your mate, you can kind of get things really interesting if you could talk about it. But if your mate sits in judgment of it, you know, if your mate says, oh, no, that's disgusting, that's horrible, of course, it's very difficult. So consider what you could bring in, you know, consider, test the waters. So if you're a woman and you want your mate to linger a little longer, you know, before he jumps in for the kill, you know, if you need him to look at you and look in your eyes and spend some time with you, and you tell him, I had a fantasy that you sat with me for a full 10 minutes and you were just looking at me and talking to me and listening to me. And I got so excited. I couldn't believe it. I had such a tremendous sexual response to it. You'd say that to your husband. Believe me, he'll give you 10 minutes of good looking. Believe me. Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. Now, I know many of you will want to get a copy of today's program. So you could do that. You just go to WBAI.org and look in the archives, which are there for a few days. Or you can go to thepositivemind.com and we'll have the archive up. Archive means the recorded program. We'll have that up for you in just a very short time. You know, we'll have that up for you by next week. No, by today. What am I talking about? By today. Hey, here is, whoever thought of this for fantasy? Of course, one of the original fantasy songs. I'll be back with you on Tuesday. at 1 p.m., my friends.